I thank the organizers for organizing this workshop and for giving me the chance to talk here. And I'd also like to thank Professor Friedlander, who's always given his support to my work. So today I'll try to tell you some ideas about correlating zeta zeros with some particular sequences. There are some results, but it's still ongoing work. It's not complete work. And at some point, this Yunus Karabulut is my PhD student. He improved certain parts that I had done before. So let me begin. The pair correlation of zeta zeros begins with the study of Hugh Montgomery, who in 1972 derived this expression, which is a sum over a pair of zeta zeros, assuming the Riemann hypothesis. This function has these properties. In particular, it has the square, so it's non-negative. He calculated the values of fxt in this form so that this function, he could get an asymptotic to this if the zeros are running up to t when x is less than or equal to t. He expressed his results also by setting x equals t to the alpha, so that that would mean the same result written in this form, so it would hold uniformly for zero alpha between 0 and 1. In fact, this calculation didn't precisely go up to alpha equals to 1, but he pointed out that it could be done, and then later on Goldstone did it by using for some terms, sieve upper bound estimates, so it can be extended even a little bit beyond, just a bit, like x equals something like t square root log t would be fine. And so by Montgomery also conjectured that after alpha equals 1, f should sort of stay flat if you keep alpha in bounded intervals. And if you don't keep alpha in bounded intervals, this must fail because of the Diophantine approximations. There should be large values of alpha where f would be at the order of logarithm of t. And from his result, Montgomery had some corollaries. These he obtained by convolving his f function with some kernel there, which is called r hat, and on the left hand side you have the Fourier transform of r hat. For example, he could get this sum for involving the sine square. This w there is the weight function, and could get such asymptotic result. And he used that to obtain that at least two-thirds of the zeta zeros are simple. And if you choose this r, such a function maximizing 1 minus u over lambda and 0, so you could get that there exist zeta zeros closer to each other than the average gap. In fact, maybe this kind of thing was the first motivation for this paper. The main aim is to get such a lim-inf less than a half, but I think it's still not realized, and if realized, it would have, I guess, big consequences. But that was an important step in. Later on, I think it's about like now 0.51 something, as far as I know. And then he could also state this pair correlation conjecture, in which you just count those zeros that are alpha between alpha and beta times the average, and it gives you this much proportion of all the zeros. So this essentially includes that this lim inf of the gaps normalized gaps is zero and the limb slope must be infinity. Now, let me just briefly go through how Montgomery derived his results. So, first you start with the von Mangold function, and there's this Perron-type formula. And then, lambda from this Perron-type formula, if you pull the integral to the left, so B means you integrate along a line, a vertical line of real part B. So if you pull it to the left and collect the residues, so this was in Landau's book, Primzahlen. And so the sum over the non-trivial zeros row here is to be understood in the symmetric sense to have convergence. So Montgomery began with this formula. And he wrote this formula for S and also for 1 minus complex conjugate of S. And so you write that down for two values of S, and then you he subtracted side by side and came up with this, with such an explicit formula. On one side there is the zeta zeros, on the other side there's the von Mangold function counting the primes, and these other terms. He replaced this zeta prime over zeta 1 minus sigma plus it by using the functional equation of the logarithmic derivative of zeta. And so that is basically putting a minus log t there. And then he takes sigma equals to 3/2 upon replacing that by log t. And then he squares both sides of the equation and integrates them all the way from minus infinity to infinity. And when you do that, on the left-hand side, you get some like this. In fact, you get more gammas, but you can discard the gammas that are not in 0t by a standard argument involving the count of zeta zeros. So that brings just a small error of logarithm cube of t. And then to carry out the integration of the sums involving lambda there, he used this Parseval formula for Dirichlet series, which he had proved with Vaughan before. So he had used this important formula for. And at the end, he obtained his estimates in these forms. Now, we can modify Montgomery's approach in a slight way. Instead of taking, first of all, sigma equals 3/2, as Montgomery did, we take sigma equals 5/2, and his formula reads like this. And again, we shall replace the zeta prime over zeta term by this functional equation that will give us this formula. Most of the terms at the end are quite small terms, so the important part on the right hand side. So on the left hand side we already have this f function of Montgomery. On the right hand side we still have to do this summations involving lambda. Okay, so what we can do is to get, if here we put instead of t the ordinates of a sequence and then sum over those t's, we shall have correlation function for the zeta zeros with that sequence of t's. So this will be a good idea if, because on the right-hand side, you have to sum over n to the minus it's, and n is weighted with the von Mangold, so this will work if you could do sums like p to the minus iat, where a is a positive integer. So if you could evaluate these sums, if t goes over such a sequence where you could do such sums, then you will get correlations. So if you apply it to Montgomery's own problem, correlating zeta zeros with themselves, therefore you will make your, the next zero I call gamma tilde, so you let your t to be gamma tilde and run through those gamma tildes. So this will be, this the formula will take this form. So then we have to do n to the minus I times the ordinate of a zeta zero. That sum? The last sums are easily evaluated again from the count of zeta zeros. When you do that count, apply, it reduces to this. So it remains to do the n to the minus I gamma tilde sums. And for that sort of sum was, first it was done by Landau, but he did it for fixed values of y, and a uniform version of it was obtained by Donek, and his formula reads like this. So you just plug this formula into this n to the minus I gamma sums, because we're assuming the Riemann hypothesis. This does not assume the Riemann hypothesis, but when you assume the Riemann hypothesis, the real parts of the rows are all the same, so it just reduces to a y to the it kind of sum. So when you do that, you obtain this estimate for f, Montgomery's function, so this essentially goes up to almost t again, and you can actually, by some work, you can get a little bit beyond t as well. In fact, this sort of idea, I was told by Professor Donek yesterday that he, summing over these t's in this way, summing over the zeta zeros, he has a theorem in which he does, I don't think he stated it in this form, but he has this, the sine squared results, the sum, a corollary of this in Montgomery's paper, he obtained also by summing. Okay, so that shows that this method can take care of Montgomery's original problem, but then we can perhaps apply it to other questions. So let us try to correlate the zeta zeros with the relative maxima of the zeta function on the critical line. So first off, we need this z1 function defined in this way. Here, chi is the usual factor in the functional equation of the zeta function. And this z1 function is related to Hardy's z function, which is defined as chi to the minus 1/2 times zeta. And z is real for real t, so basically you're turning the zeta function on the critical line into a function that's a function of a real variable with real values, so it vanishes at the same points as zeta does. And so this z1 has an absolute value is the same as z prime's absolute value. Now, if you look at z prime, what we want to know now, where are these maxima? So to see that, you can look at z prime over z, which is just the, turns out to be imaginary part of zeta prime over zeta, the minus it though. So then you use the partial fraction formula for the zeta function and evaluate this imaginary part. So you have a sum like this, and you obtain this zeta prime over zeta t is essentially pi over 4 minus some small term plus the sum over the zeta zeros. Now, from this sum, you can see that between two zeros of the zeta function, there will exactly be one point where z prime is zero, and that will be the relative maxima between the two zeros. So, of course, that prime could be zero if a multiple zero exists at that point as well. But between two zeros, it has exactly one maximum point. And so with this Z1 function, Hall showed in 1999 that if you assume the Riemann hypothesis, all of the non-real zeros of Z1 are on the critical line. This Z1 function was introduced before, as far as I know, in a work of Condry and Ghosh, but they did not have this assertion in their paper. They needed just that the zeros are close to the critical line. Okay, so I don't know how I can read this. This is in LaTeX backslash bar row. So it's row is reserved for the zeta zero. So this variation of row, variance of row is, and I call its imaginary part to be upsilon. So let it run through the zeros of Z1, which are the maxima between the zeros of the zeta function. So then our summing, that Montgomery's explicit formula makes it clear that we have to evaluate this sum. Now, to evaluate this sum, we form this contour integral where first of all, its vertical sides are at minus delta and 1 plus delta. We choose delta to be 1 over logarithm of t. Now let's take those zeros between t over 2 and t, but we choose the horizontal sides in a careful way so as to avoid hitting the zeros of Z1 there. And you can do that because Z1 has basically the same count of zeros as the zeta function. So you obtain, first of all, that the horizontal sides, you can easily bound them by this quantity. The integral can be bounded like that. And we will need an approximation for Z1 prime over Z1. For this, the formulas for chi prime over chi are well known, and they're easily derived from the properties of the gamma function. And the first one is an estimate for sigma, for real part of S greater than or equal to 1, for the size of zeta j's derivative divided by zeta. So we will need these estimates. You see, Z1 was this function, and former approximations to this if you're working, you see, the size of chi prime over chi is basically like minus logarithm of t, logarithm of t over 2 pi. So they would just replace and with logarithm of t, the capital T, so with a fixed quantity, so call it L, so it would be zeta prime minus zeta prime plus L over 2 zeta with a fixed L. But that doesn't really work. Actually, in this example, it works, but it gives in a restricted range. In some other example we considered, it totally does not work, actually. So you have to derive a new approximation for Z1 prime over zeta. If you write out this Z1 prime over zeta, you obtain this in terms of zeta and chi functions, and applying the estimates for zeta, j's derivative over zeta, and the chi estimates, you can reduce it to this form. Now, in the denominator, we have this quantity. We open the denominator as a power series, and you take the terms up to log t over log log t, and then it becomes like this. So this is the approximation formula we get for Z1 prime over Z1. these lambda star functions are related to the zeta function by this. They're defined like this. So lth power of zeta prime over zeta. And the next one is the small lambda star, and they have these values on at the prime powers. Okay. So this formula is, of course, assumed Riemann hypothesis, first of all, because of this zeta j over zeta estimate. If we didn't do that, and if you assume this Vinogradov-Korobov estimates, this derived from their zero-free region, that wouldn't really, again, be enough to get... I mean, that would work, but the final result would be valid in a smaller range of alpha. So now we return to our integration. For the right vertical side, you put your this formula for Z1 prime over Z1 we found, and it appears like this. And for such integrals here, you see, remember now this k power can go up to log t over log log t. So we need this kind of lemma. This sort of lemma occurs in Gonick's work. It occurs in Levinson's work before. But as far as I know, it was always used with a fixed r, negative or positive, but fixed. Here you obtain and it's valid for r if r go is small. So in our case, a will be like t, so r can go up to log t over log log t. Okay, so when we apply this lemma to the integrals, we find that the right vertical side is small as well. It's bounded by this quantity, which is small for this problem. Okay, so for the left vertical side of the integral, you just have this formula by passing from s to 1 minus s. So the integral on the vertical side minus delta real part goes into an integral at 1 plus delta. And with this chi prime and z1 prime integrals, the chi prime integral, again, by using the standard estimates, is shown to be small. And the z1 prime over z1 integral, then you again use these formulas, the formula we derived for z1 prime over z1. And so at the end of this integration, we have estimated the sum n to the minus rho in this form. And then the sums here, we can take m equal to n terms, and one of them has to be greater than n over 2, so not both of them n over 2, less than, but one is greater than. It turns out that in these sums, the m equals n gives the main term, and the other terms are bounded again. So this is the end of the evaluation of n to the minus variance of rho, which is a relative maximum on the critical line. So this was the formula in the modified approach, and we put our formula for n to the minus variance of rho into here, and then this is what we obtain. As the correlation of zeta zeros with the relative maxima. So first of all, we see that this is, again, works until almost x equals to t. It is asymptotically real, which it didn't have to be, in fact. In the case, in Montgomery's case, it's real and positive. So if we write this in this alpha, using x equals t to the alpha, it would have alpha minus 2 alpha square, and this t to the minus 2 alpha log t term, it's always there. That comes from replacing this zeta prime over zeta 1 minus sigma in the beginning of the argument. So this is the result. Of course, I mean, this needs some interpretation, which is, I tried some Fourier transforms in it. I never hoped that this would beat any known gap results, but anyway, it is a curiosity in itself, in my opinion. So, but it still lacks interpretation. Another application we considered was to correlate zeros of two distinct Dirichlet L functions. You can assume that these both L functions are involve characters which are primitive. So the analog of Montgomery's explicit formula is this one, which was obtained quite easily following his derivation. And in this formula, we again take sigma equals 5 over 2, and then sum the t's. See, there's a, so it's a sum over the zeros of LS chi, one of the characters, and there's a t there. Now we let t go through the zeros of LS psi, another L function. So, and then sum over those t's, and the formula turns into this. And from the count of zeros, again, we can calculate the easy terms and discard those gammas, which are not in zero t, but in an error term like this, logarithm cube of qt. So, and again, this time, we get the analog of Landau-Gonneck formula for Dirichlet L functions. I think it there's also, this was possibly done by Fujii as well. But it's just is a very similar to Gonick's formula here. So we plug that in to our formula, this n to the zeros of LS psi, and it's a complex conjugate. So we plug that in into that formula, and then we have these lambda sums involve things like this. If x, if chi is not the same character as psi, then we know that such a sum is not large, it's small. This is like the prime number theorem in arithmetic progressions. In case chi is the same as the psi function, then it's of course like you're summing lambda squares. So you get a main term in that case. So the final result is this. We are trying to correlate two zeros of two L functions. And so we have this expression for this Montgomery's, analogous to Montgomery's function. And the estimate turns out to be like this. Now, there is no main term. The E is zero if the characters are different, and E is one if the characters are the same. So this is the final result, but this one may have a little interpretation in the sense, first of all, I think there is a general idea that you will have a main term only if you're correlating some zeros with the same set again. And the other thing is that if you chose chi and psi to be complex, so if they were complex characters and complex conjugates of each other, then you would still get zero main term. And that would say something like, for a complex character, the zeros in the upper half plane are not really correlated with the zeros in the lower half plane. So that's one little interpretation one can get from this formula. So we will still keep, well, there's some other applications I partially worked out, but I'm more worried about getting interpretations, so that's where our work stands now. Thank you.